often walked.
Thank you, Veronica. John Harris.
On the street before, but the pavement's always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you
my
live.
My fair ladies in town, this is, of course, one of the signature
Are
songs.
There lilac trees in the heart of town.
It is one of my favorite songs.
Can you hear a lark in any other part of town? Does enchantment pour out of every door? No, it's just on the street where you live. Oh, the towering feeling just to know somehow you are.
I know I have to do my show, but now I'm in the middle of this thing and I hate to. I hate to give it a fade. So we'll fade it anyway. Go ahead, Mark Baser. Put it over there. Oh, dang it. Mark Baser, the...
You may suddenly...
Hey, Griff, you got to kill that for me, man. So, yeah, just would you go over there? Mark Baser's walking around outside our studio windows. He's got my credit card. It's a long story, but he's got my credit card, and he wants to give it to me. And I said, Mark, I'm kind of doing a radio show here. Back to Vic Damone singing... On the street where you live. So, my fair lady's in town. I'm not here to talk about My Fair Lady, but that song has been on my brain for the last few days. I've listened to almost every version of it in my little condo that I'm staying in downtown. Probably 10 of them last night. I listened to the Johnny Mathis and then Nat King Cole. The Willie Nelson version of that is positively lovely. I listened to Dionne Warwick sing it. I listened to everybody sing that. And I decided that the one that I just wanted to share with you is Nat King Cole. And Griff walks in, this 20-something, and he goes, do you mind if I suggest a different version? I'm like, who are you to tell me which version of that song is the awesomest? I said, which one do you like? He said, Vic Damone. I said, how do you know the Vic Damone version of On the Street Where You Live from My Fair Lady? You're a Kanye West fan, for crying out loud. He just kind of shrugged, said, I do.
Actually, it came to me since we talked about it.
How do you know that song?
It is the...
You are too young to care about that song.
Plays over the end credits of the first episode of Mad Men. I was like, why do I know that song? There it is.
Well, good for you that you found your reference point. Sam, does that song kind of just tug at your heart in some way?
I don't mind it, but to be honest, I still want to know about the credit card. That's where my mind is.
I was thinking the same thing. Why is someone wandering around with your card?
Somebody has my credit card, but it's not a big deal.
It's been retrieved.
I'm just walk into the studio. We're just cranking up the show. And Mark Baser, the comedian, the talk show host, the guy that does that Channel 11 show, he's walking by. And he and I have been missing each other for the last few days because... When he did his last show at the Hideout, I opened up a tab for some friends. And we were having some beers and watching his show and having a good time. We then left the Hideout, and it dawned on me that I left my credit card with the bartender. So I texted Mark and I said, hey, if you're still at the Hideout, would you grab my credit card? You need to close out my tab, go ahead and write in a tip, and then bring it to me. I haven't seen him for a few weeks since then. He's had my credit card the whole time. And as I sit here, he walks by and he goes, I've got your credit card.
Are you busy?
That's what he said. Are you busy? I go, I'm in a... What do you think? Am I busy? He says, can you come out here and get the card? I go, no, I can't come out there and get the card. Griffin ran out and got the card.
But, I mean, you were also in the minute of just listening to that song, too. You could have...
I could have said...
You were like, I'm too busy sitting here listening to this song.
If it was a Kanye West song, he would have ran out there.
So I'm also kind of tuned into that song because, you know, the lyrics, it's about the street where you live. And it's a bit of a love song. I don't know the whole story behind its place in that show. But I've been staying at a condo by myself while my wife Brenda has been living in Minnesota, and we're transitioning from there to here. But we've been apart now for about 5 weeks, and we'll be fine. You know, we're in our 50s, but it's the longest time that we've ever been apart. And so as I was playing that song in my head, walking by the Civic Opera House this week, I thought of some of the lyrics, and it just made me miss Brenda and miss sharing a house on a street. Plus, we're looking for a house or a condo, and we think we found one, but the song sort of resonated with me a little bit. Then I went back to my condo, and I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, if we buy this one place, I'm staying in a place temporarily, and we're looking for a place. One that we have in mind has room for a ping pong table, an outdoor ping pong table. It'll have a big porch in the back. And so, like a lot of men away from their wives, sitting in condos that they're renting in big cities with a cocktail in their hand, I opened up my laptop and I started to surf for outdoor ping pong tables and found myself in a chat room about ping pong tables. I've never had an experience like this. A, I've never chatted, and certainly I never thought it would be about outdoor ping pong tables, but I found an enthusiastic community. And one of them said, I'm the owner of the company. Talk to me here. I thought, what an opportunity to talk to the owner of a company about outdoor ping pong tables. So I clicked through, not knowing where I was going to go. And it was the owner of a ping pong company. And he and I talked for about a half an hour, like on a Thursday night around 11 p.m., about his swell ping pong tables. And by the end of that half hour, I felt like I have to have a $2,000 ping pong table. Why would I buy an $800 ping pong table when I can get a $2,000 outdoor ping pong table? Because this one has more bounce, and it has a sleeve for your paddles. And by the way, they don't call them paddles, they call them bats. When you buy a $2,000 table, you get bats that go with it.
So the sleeve, just doing the math here, the sleeve for your paddles runs you about $1,200. If that's the difference between an $800 table and a $2,000 table.
I'd like to think that I'm getting more value than just a sleeve for my bats.
Okay.
But thank you for thinking about that.
Ah, yes. How could we forget about the bounce?
It reminds me of Major League Serrano, hots for bats. Hots for bats.
Do you play ping pong, Sam? You're a sports guy?
Not really. Not well. If I don't do it well, I don't do it.
I understand that. But I think if you get yourself on a $2,000 ping pong table with padded bats and more bounce, you'll find that your game improves and you'll love it even more.
That's a lot of rent, John.
$2,000?
It's a lot of rent, yes. Yeah.
Well, you don't pay it every month. You just buy the thing one time.
Mm.
But I was also amazed at, once again, sort of the accessibility that the internet provides, good or bad. It was just an amazing thing. There's a guy, and I don't know where he was, California or Australia. He was wearing short sleeve shirts based on his picture. But he and I were having a swell conversation about the most obtuse thing in the world. And it was informative and fun. And I'll probably buy from him just because he was smarter than the other guys. Not sure exactly how much I'm going to spend on the table. I need to run this by my chief financial officer, but I think I might just pull the trigger. The table's got to sit outside in the snow, you know? So we'll see how that goes. Speaking of advanced technology, have you been following the story about how Argo T says that throughout Chicago, they're no longer going to accept cash? This is upsetting to those of us that, I don't know, grew up in America. I mean, like, we're past the point where you feel guilty about using your credit card at McDonald's. Once upon a time, as we were all learning about the value of ATMs and debit cards, not credit cards, you still felt a little, I don't know, unprepared when you were making small purchases with your debit card. But we're past that now. You buy a coffee with your debit card. Nobody looks at you. In fact, now it's the other way around. When you fiddle with cash, now they start to look at you. And the pendulum has come so far that now Argo is saying in at least six locations in Chicago, a few of them at the airport, a few at UIC, a few downtown, that they're no longer going to accept cash. And there's a lot of advantages to them. A, the line moves quicker, but also we tend to, when we use plastic, buy more. Money looks and feels like money. A debit card is just numbers. It's magic. A debit card is just magic. You just hand it, and then suddenly somebody gives you a cup of coffee. You don't even think about the money. So with a debit card, you'll go ahead and get that Apple Danish. Oh, yes, you will. If you had to pull off $4 for that thing, you'd say, wow, that's $4. So it works for them. But how is that even legal in the United States? How can you say our currency, it says right on there, this is legal tender. How is it that a company says, yeah, we're not going to take American dollars here in America, or quarters or 20s, whatever you've got? I understand their interest in that. I also understand how this isn't that big a deal, because most folks that go to Starbucks and Argo tend to be higher end, and they tend to use more debit cards than people that go to Mr. Donut. The Mr. Donut crowd, they're still more cash heavy. The Argo crowd, they're more plastic heavy. But when I get to be king, you will still have to take cash. And you're going to say, oh, it's a real hassle for us. I'm going to say, well, then don't be Argo T. You have to take cash.
I always think about, this was probably two winters ago. It's 10 below zero, and I'm in line to pay at the parking lot meter. This little old lady, the sweetest lady ever, probably 80 years old, is paying for the $17 fee with singles.
Oh, no.
And like the fifth bill in, you know, she's trying to uncrinkle it on the side. It took 15 minutes to pay the 17 singles to get into the meter. So when it comes to things like that, I do understand, but it's still a little crazy that we're putting cash off to the wayside.
I thought that story was going to end, and then you said, little old lady, here's my debit card.
No,
let me just...
No.
Griff, did you think that's how that story... When you tell that story again, Sam?
Well, I know Sam a little better than you do, so no, I didn't...
I would amend the telling of that story.
So I couldn't feel my fingers. I couldn't feel my fingers.
I know, and she's unwrinkling on the side of the meter head 17 $1 bills. How do you think she felt? I don't think her circulation is as good as yours. I'll bet she was freezing.
She was. But if she would have had that debit card, this wouldn't have been an issue.
You are the worst person in the United States of America.
I don't know. He doesn't know her $17. Maybe if it was like a $4 charge, then I would
think. If it was $6, I would have paid it twice.
Yeah, yeah.
17,
17's a lot.
I don't know.
I'm with him on this
one. Well, I was going to take calls on the cashless society, but let's take calls on how bad a person Sam is. The number's 312-981-7200. Tell me if you think he's the worst person ever. And just, would you please reflect to me your thoughts about Argo's right to not take our cash? I'm not sure. I don't want to be a troglodyte here, but I think they have to do that.
I have often walked.
This is my version.
Down the street before.
I like this one just a teeny bit better.
But the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before. All at once am I, several stories high, knowing I'm on the street where you live.
Okay, 10:26. We'll take a couple of phone calls here. What happened to you, Dan? I can't believe this either. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, King John. How are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
A couple of years back, I was at a mall early in the morning picking up something, and they obviously hadn't gotten their change in for the day. And all I had on was a $100 bill, and the young guy said he couldn't cash it. So I said, that's no problem. There was a bank out in the parking lot. So I went to the drive-up. And I wanted to cash this $100 bill. She asked me if I had an account there, and I said no. She said I couldn't cash the $100 bill. I got U.S. American currency, $100 bill, and I cannot cash it on me.
The very measure of success. I have an American $100 bill, and it means nothing here in America.
Absolutely.
You know, I went to a place to, and I don't remember if it was a 50, 100. It might have even been a 20. But for some reason, I needed to change it out. And so I went to one of these little mom-and-pop shops where they sell gum and cigarettes. And I said, I looked for the least expensive thing in there. You know, I bought a thing of Chiclets or whatever it was. So it's like, and, you know, that's like $1.94. But I knew now I'll make change, which is the dumbest way to make change. And the guy would, and the guy said, nah, I'm not going to do that. He goes, it was the same sort of thing. He goes, I don't want to give you all of my small change for a a pack of gum. I go, I'm not sure you get to do that. He goes, yeah, I'm not gonna sell that to you. I walked out with my bill.
Well, whenever I do that now, I go to my bank and I have my bank card with me to show them that I have an account just in case.
Yeah, but you know, when I get that they have a commercial interest in servicing their customers. But so help me, when I get to be king, you
but
will
it's
be
a bank. It's a bank.
That's it. It's a chartered.
Supposed to have money there,
and they're an American bank, and you're an American with an American. Thank you for the call, Dan.
All right.
Have a good day. Griff, let me just take another call or two, and then we'll do the news. One quick call here. Arlene, you're on the air. Hey, what's up?
Good morning, John. It's about an hour drive. We went to a retina specialist in toward Chicago. And after the appointment, I wanted to buy the eye vitamins that they had for my husband. And I had cash. They wouldn't accept the cash. I had to have a debit card. I had a checkbook. Wouldn't accept my checkbook. I had to have cash.
Really?
Couldn't buy the eye vitamins. I said, I'm an hour away from here. Can't you make an exception? Nope.
Really?
No vitamins.
They only wanted your debit card, right? They only wanted plastic.
Exactly.
Wow. I am sorry to hear that. That makes no sense to me. Arlene, thanks for the phone call. You guys also need a new eye doctor, don't you? It's 10:28. Thanks, Veronica. This is John Williams. It's 10:37 on this lovely Saturday morning. I just want to say one thing about the Blackhawks. They were not only a good team this year, they were a great team this year. And I don't know what the hell happened those four games. But the audio cuts that we're listening to in Sam's sports report, I think are kind of insane. You'd think that either they were supposed to win the Stanley Cup every year or that we were terrible this year. Isn't another way to look at this, we were bad for four games, and boy, we picked a bad four games to be bad on. But I mean, the idea that, don't worry, Quenneville is safe. Of course he's safe. He's kind of won three Stanley Cups in the last 7 years, so we got that going for us. I mean, let's get rid of Kane and Taves, too, because you know what? Just throw them all out.
Somebody called into the postgame show last week and said, you know what? I think they need to take the C away from Taves. Yes, that will fix.
I don't understand.
That will fix everything.
This. I don't know if it's a sense of entitlement or just lack of perspective, but and again, I get it. Those were four games we should have won. We should have won two of them. So I don't understand what happened either. Three goals in four games is bizarre. I don't know what happened, but I think I'll bet you we're going to be pretty good next year. I'll bet
they
we'll be a pretty
be,
good team next year.
But because of, like you said, the three cups and the usual reliance on a team making a deep run to be swept as the number one seed. And if you go back, John, and think about all the sports teams in this city, that's probably the most shocking playoff loss ever, because they were the best team in the conference, the pedigree, the championship pedigree, and they didn't win a single game. It's shocking.
Against the eighth seed, right.
Right. I mean, and Nashville, before the season, Nashville was expected to do some pretty serious things, and they kind of tailed off in the middle and regathered at the end. But still, three-time champs, number one seed, home ice, and like you said, three goals in four games.
And they're not saying, hey, isn't it great that we won those other ones, so don't worry. I mean, I know they need to be either contrite or concerned, but relax. It's okay. Everybody's
I wouldn't
fine.
Expect mass changes. No, and
no,
of course,
I hope not.
The head coach will be there.
I want some bigger guys. Like the one thing in this series, and some of the series, depending on the matchups, it's like we need some bigger, meaner dudes.
Right. In years past, you've had the Bufflins, the Bickles, the Sods. You didn't have that this year.
Yeah.
And I also think, you know, somebody in that core, just because of how much money they make, I think somebody in that core is going to go. Now, it's going to be tough to unload Brent Seabrook. The popular trend is people have been trying to trade Corey Crawford for years. I think that's stupid. But you've got like six or seven guys that make over half of your payroll, and it's tough to put together a team like that. Hmm. And Stan Bowman has admitted that. I mean, they haven't had a first-round pick in the last couple of years either.
Well, then maybe we should just get rid of them
all. Yeah, get rid of all of them. Sell the team.
Does Northwestern have a hockey team? Let's just get some kids in there that want to play. All right, it's 10:40. So while we were at the Pinstripes in Oak Brook Terrace for our Hometown Voices tour stop, thank you for coming out, Mary and the rest of you who said hello. Thank you all for coming out and making that really a memorable day for me. There was a lot of love for WGN Radio at Pinstripes in Oak Brook. One of the guests we interviewed was Sue Kelly from Kelly Cruises. On Monday, I'll announce a cruise that Brenda and I are going to take with her on the ship, the Explorer. Now, I had a chance to talk to Peter Greenberg this week, and we haven't broadcast the interview for a number of reasons, but I just want to play part of it here, because when Peter Greenberg, the travel editor for CBS, and I were visiting, having this conversation, he had just stepped into Paris. This is this week, right after the terrorist shooting. And he was in Europe to see the christening of a brand new luxury ship. So he was describing a ship the likes of which Sue Kelly and I are planning this cruise on. And I thought, oh, good, Peter, let's talk. And then lo and behold, Paris happens. So our conversation begins with what it has been like in Paris since that shooting.
I am in Paris. I just came in from Brussels and then heading up to Bangkok. But timing being everything, of course, Paris is in a lockdown situation, but it's opening up relatively soon after the incident on the iconic Champs-Élysées, where a gunman appeared to be asking a police officer a question and then opened fire with a Kalashnikov rifle. Of course, they closed off the entire Champs-Élysées, which to do that in Paris is a big deal. But in keeping with the spirit of the French and the thoroughness of the police work, the Champs-Élysées is back open. Life goes on in spite of the tragedy.
People are out strolling about, having coffee and that sort of thing?
Very much so. You know, Americans tend to forget that Europe has had this crisis for a long time. As insensitive as this may sound, most people who live here regard it now as almost a part of the cost of being in this country.
You are in France for a short while. What sort of travel are you on?
I'm in France just for a quick trip here to broadcast my radio show, actually, and then I'm leaving to go to Bangkok for a big travel summit. The travel summit is the World Travel and Tourism Council. It's an annual global summit they do every year. Think of it as the G8 of travel.
Well, I suppose a couple things that will come up are how the travel industry is going to cope with the, if nothing else, bad news. It's clearly a tragedy, but it sort of looms larger when you think about how that affects international travel and tourism.
And remember, John, travel to Paris has been down since November of 15 when they had the terrible nightclub shooting. It hasn't really bounced back. It's still down about 20%.
And I've been there since and had just the time of my life. I can't wait to go back to Paris, this event notwithstanding. If you said, hey, John, we've got a trip to Paris tomorrow, would you go? I would say absolutely yes.
And I'd be right there with you. I had friends of mine who were scheduled to go to Paris right after that shooting in November of 2015. They didn't want to go. They wanted to cancel. I insisted. I mean, I forced them to go. And within 48 hours of their arrival here in Paris, they went out and extended their trip for another 10 days. Because the worst four-letter word that starts with F when it comes to travel is fear. And I'm going to say something that's also going to sound politically insensitive, but it's pragmatic. And that is, in my experience, the best time to go anywhere is after a natural disaster, a civil disturbance, or an act of political terrorism and violence. Because, A, that's when people are more likely to be thrilled to see you. You'll have great service. You'll be helping them, and you won't be standing in line.
Peter, where were you the other day? I understand you were on this new ship.
I was part of the ceremony that christened the most luxurious new cruise ship ever built. It's called the Silver Muse. We were in Monaco, and I was joined by Prince Albert, who participated in the ceremony. What's interesting about this ship is it represents what's going on in the cruise industry. Every single shipyard in the world right now is operating at 100% capacity. They're building 56 new cruise ships of every size and pedigree you can imagine, including the small luxury ships, which is what this is. You and I have seen the big behemoth ships that carry 6,000-plus passengers. That is definitely not this ship. This is only 600 passengers. It's all-inclusive. It's all suites. You don't have to go to your wallet to pay for every Diet Coke you ever have. And perhaps the most attractive aspect of this ship, there are two, actually. One, of course, you can't talk about cruise ships without talking about food. What they've done differently here is they've gotten rid of the main dining room. Every cruise ship has a main dining room, and you're either first seating or second seating. It's rather, you know, relatively regimented. And this particular ship, they've gone to 8 separate different cuisine dining rooms, which you can go to as many times as you want, as often as you want, as many days as you want, from 8 different kinds of food. And then the thing that really is attractive to me is, and this is a number that might be surprising to most people, these days cruise lines in general are calling at more than 1,000 ports worldwide. That's a large number. However, Silversea, because their ships are smaller, can go where the big ships can't go. And they're actually calling at 850 of these ports that the other ships don't go to. they physically can't get in there, mm-hmm. which means that you not only have a great experience on the ship, it's that when you get to a port, you're the only guys there. You can have a deep, immersive experience without 20,000 other people there with you.
What were the staterooms like?
They have done wonders with their allocation of space. Not only are the staterooms big, the balconies are actually functional. But the real key here is the bathrooms. Imagine every suite on this ship has a bathroom with a sunken tub. This is on a cruise ship. This is amazing. I mean, I'm used to cabins that are so small you have to use an industrial-sized spatula just to change your mind.
I was reading an article in USA Today this week about one of their competitors, Regent Seven Seas, and their new Explorer, which is another high-end, yeah. smaller ship, 750 passengers, et cetera, all-inclusive. And they say that in that category, you pay about $1,000 per person per night. Is that where this one checks in?
Absolutely. They're very similar in that respect. But the good news about it is it's all-inclusive, which means you want to have five drinks at dinner, you're going to have five drinks at dinner. You want caviar, yeah. have caviar.
Yeah.
There's no tipping because it's already included. And there's a great feeling there because it's not a question of how much it costs. It's about how much it's worth with value. You could actually do a cost comparison with some of the other cruise lines that may be much lower on a competitive level with their rate. But by the time the cruise is over, you might be on a par with these guys because of everything that you bought on board that wasn't included in the rate.
You sure check your anxiety at the door. When you walk up the plank and you the gangway and they're standing there with a glass of champagne, ding, vacation starts, man. You do not have a care in the world.
Wait a minute, John. Did you just say the plank?
I did. Well, that's how they usually ask me to get off the ship. They always welcome me on with champagne, and then they usually roll out the plank at some point mid-cruise. It's our conversation with Peter Greenberg earlier this week, and it's really embarrassing when they roll out the plank for me. I usually eat too much caviar. Actually, he's right. And sometimes in the buffet, you'll see caviar, and you go, what is that? And you go, oh, my gosh, that's caviar. And you think, wow, I could have a lot of caviar. They're able to do that because, in fact, nobody wants a lot of caviar. It's sort of a show of extravagance, but it's a bunch of dark little fish eggs. And you'll put some on a cracker and go, oh, that's good, as you're slurping down a champagne or something, because nobody really likes caviar. It's 10:48. We interviewed this week the author of Wait What? And Life's Other Essential Questions. Did you hear my conversation with James Ryan? I'm not going to play that back for you, but I just wanted to give you the five most important questions he said you should ask. He's the dean of Harvard's Graduate School of Education. He gave a graduation speech last year, and that speech went viral. It was taped and then broadcast. I don't even know if it was broadcast, but it was online, and then people started to share it, and suddenly it had millions of hits, and then a publisher called and said, what a great speech. You should make that into a book. And so now it's a very small, gift-sized book. It runs 130-some pages. They're small pages. You could read it in, 45 minutes or whatever. But he says, these are the five questions that if in business or in your relationships, you would pause and remember, your life would be better. And having put that out there, he said the response he's been getting is overwhelming. People say, wow, you're right. Particularly the one question that is the title of the book has been changing for many people. So let me give you that list in a minute. It's 10:53, the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast after 11 o'clock features Eric Zorn and Scott Stantis and yours truly. And we kick around a lot of subjects, everything from the Cubs rings to the missing Armada. We start with Bill O'Reilly. And we move quickly through a bunch of very interesting topics this week. You'll hear the gang gaggle along right after 11 o'clock. So this week I talked briefly with Jim Ryan. He is the dean of Harvard's Graduate School of Education. And he wrote a book that's subtitled Life's Other Essential Questions. There's five questions, he said, that should guide your existence. They are in reverse order here. What truly matters? Okay. How can I help? Couldn't we at least ... That one in particular is sort of a strategy when you are talking to somebody who has a different view on life or on something. His wife wanted to have more kids. He didn't want to have more kids. Couldn't we at least was the start of a question that he thought was very helpful to them in that process. Number four, I wonder ... So, there's sort of
starting points. And he said, if you use these in business and in life, your life and your business will be better. The title of the book is Wait, What? And that's the fifth of them. Actually, it's the first of them. It's the title of it in the first chapter. Wait, what? And wait, what is when somebody says something that you would leap to be critical of, or when you just don't understand, don't be judgmental, don't be accusatory. Say, wait, what? As almost as if you don't understand. It gives you license to say, I don't get it. I'm not dumb here, but just wait. What? Do that again. Explain that. And I'm not perfect at this, but in interviewing people, I found myself doing that sometimes too. I know all the stuff I don't know. And so sometimes somebody will say something and they'll even say, you know, and I say, no, I don't. Wait, what? So that's the thrust of it. And you'll get a better understanding of it if you get and read Wait, What? That's the title of the book. This guy had parents who did not graduate from college, and he himself graduated from Yale. He's accomplished in many ways, went on to Harvard, where he became, again, the dean of the Graduate School of Education. And early in the book, he tells this story. I grew up in Midland Park, he writes, a blue-collar town in northern New Jersey, which was filled with plumbers, electricians, and landscapers. It was surrounded by wealthier suburbs, whose homeowners employed the plumbers, electricians, and landscapers from Midland. Our grocery store, the A&P, was on the border of Midland Park and a wealthy neighboring town. As my mother was putting groceries in her car one day in the A&P parking lot, a particularly well-coiffed woman came over and asked my mom if she was from Midland Park. After my mom told her that she did indeed live in Midland Park, the woman pointed to the Yale sticker on the rear windshield of my parents' car, and she said, I don't mean to pry, but I'm just so curious. Was that Yale sticker on the car when you bought it? Oh, my. And that's an instance where I guess if the woman had inserted a wait, what? Actually, I don't know how that sentence, that question saves that question, but it's an interesting book. A great gift for somebody. He said some classrooms are using it as a sort of teaching thing, and some businesses have got it up on their board, too. It's 10:57. Okay, Mincing Rascals after the news, and the news is coming up here on WG. Veronica, here are just a few things that you should know about recycling on this Earth Day. You ready?
Okay.
It's 11:09. This is John Williams. In just moments, our Mincing Rascals broadcast of the podcast. I'll just zip through these. We got a good segment to get to, but pizza boxes, you knew you can't recycle those, right? Any cardboard that is laminated or slippery or greasy does not go in the recycling bin. Pizza box, you don't. Your Chinese food container, you do not recycle that. Your Starbucks paper cup is not recyclable. Your Chipotle bowl is not recyclable. Anything with food, anything with oil is going to gunk up the system. And that's so many of the paper and plastic things that we have in our world.
It's so confusing. It's hard. You want to recycle, but there are just so many rules.
That's what I do. So my wife and I kind of have these conversations around the recycling bin. She goes, don't put that in there. I go, no, I'm trying to help. She goes, you're hurting when you put in the pizza box. I go, it's a pizza box. Talked to somebody this week. They said, don't put the pizza box in there. We can't. It doesn't help. It hurts.
You know what my biggest pet peeve, and I think that's it happens all the time. People will like gather up their aluminum and put them in a recycling thing, but they'll put it in a plastic bag inside the recycling bin, and you can't do that because they don't want the plastic bags.
They don't want plastic bags. Frankly, they're not even crazy about aluminum. Your aluminum foil doesn't have that much aluminum in it, and if the aluminum foil has a little baked on cheese, don't put it in the recycling. They don't want food in there. They crush the glass all down to chips and then use it for roadway projects and mixes. Some of it gets melted back into bottles, but they only want food or beverage containers of glass. They don't want windows. They don't want Pyrex. They don't want dishes. They do not want those kinds of glass. And lastly, they said if it's smaller than a Post-it note, don't recycle it. They can't sort it. So that plastic, say, lid to a bottle or a pull tab, it's too small. Don't recycle those things either. Huh. Okay, 11:10, WGM. This is John Williams. Our Mincing Rascals podcast, you can always get wherever you get your finer podcasts. And we always post it at WGNradio.com. This week, Scott Stantis and Eric Zorin joined me. We start with Scott Stantis answering the question, should Bill O'Reilly at Fox News get one last show to say goodbye?
Hell no. I mean, that whole toxic environment over at Fox, Ailes goes, and they paid out, what, over $10 million? I think it's the number is $13 or $14 million for harassment suits against O'Reilly. No, these are horrible, terrible people who shouldn't be on the air.
I strongly disagree that you shouldn't allow him to have a farewell show. I think it should not be live, but I think they should put some constrictions on it.
Because they'll do it live.
They'll do it live. Here's why. I feel like, and this is a problem I have broadly in broadcast media, and maybe also in print in some ways, which is that over the years, personalities develop relationships with their audience, and it seems only fair to allow them to say a dignified farewell, as long as it doesn't, promote another station or settle scores, just to say goodbye. It seems like
he's a sexual predator.
Well, let me ask. Let me ask John though. I mean, John, you've probably never been fired, have you? You're such a talented.
Not exactly sure
man.
What happened to me here if I was fired or not. But keep going.
But you're back. I actually think WGN gave Kathy and Judy like 2 hours, and it was a wonderful show. I thought, and I don't think it hurt the station.
I had a last show here.
Who did they molest?
Well, that's yet to be discovered,
isn't it, Scott?
It's a huge difference. It's a massive difference. You're talking about someone who,
here's another difference here. Bill O'Reilly is not being let go because he sexually harassed women. He's being let go because it got out into the general media.
Yeah, they were pretty careful.
They've been giving money. They gave out $13 million over this. They knew that he was doing this.
Yeah, and they were paying it. He was too. But I think that's a very interesting point. The statement that they issued did not say it was because of his behavior. They did not reference his behavior. They simply said he's on vacation until infinity. That's what they
forever.
Said.
So, no, I mean, I feel like the standard here is you can harass all the women you want, and as long as it doesn't get out into the media, make the front page of the New York Times and cost us advertisers, and when that happens, you're gone.
Okay,
but until then, they knew they were paying the money.
Okay, but what's your point? Because you're denigrating Fox here, but you're also trying to say that Bill O'Reilly should be given a last show.
I'm just saying you should be able to say farewell, maybe not an entire show, but maybe a five-minute segment.
A video pod.
On the other hand, I have to say, the other thing is, though, that this was my opinion. I used to cover radio years ago. And I, this is something that kind of ate at me when they let people go and they didn't give them a chance to say goodbye. Now, of course, Bill O'Reilly can put out a podcast. He can put out a statement. It'll go viral. He doesn't really need Fox to say goodbye to his. So maybe I'll just change my opinion. That's kind of fashionable these days. I'll completely flip-flop and say, no, he shouldn't have a show. Because he does have the opportunity to say goodbye.
And his viewers, his fans, did not do anything wrong. They liked him. Actually, I think I still do. He is a terrific television performer.
Yeah, he's
an entertainer. He's informed. His books are kind of truthy. He's got an audience out there. And those people who like him didn't do anything wrong. What this whole conversation is ignoring is the opportunity for those people to hear his side of the story, or at least hear him say goodbye. Like Eric said, maybe don't even settle scores, but say, it's been a privilege to talk to you each night. He said as much when he was with the Pope. Oh, my God, is the timing on that unbelievable.
Yeah. He met with Pope John.
I'm sure the Pope is somewhere turning to one of his people going, really? Really? Are you kidding me?
Who is my schedule?
Are you serious?
Who do I have to forgive today?
I know. This is not the photo op I need. I don't know if the Pope worries about optics, but that was a bad one. And it was a good one for O'Reilly. Not good enough for Fox, good enough for the guy in the hat. Boom.
Where's he going to end up? I mean, you've got The Blaze, which is one place. He could end up in his own channel, which would make perfect sense.
Can't imagine he's going to find a platform as big as the one he had. The last thing we should just touch on is where Scott started, and that is this environment that probably is still prevalent in other companies and broadcast outlets as well. Women and men toiling under the notion that we don't really treat the ladies fairly here, that lewd comments and squeezes and not hiring equally or promoting equally are tolerated, even at a place that is celebrated for not doing that and then saying, okay, we got caught, we're going to fix it, still hadn't fixed it. Talk to me about the Lost Armada, Eric.
The Lost Armada,
I'm not picking the most important stories of the week today. I'm just picking the ones that have gotten the most traction.
Well, I'll talk to you about it. It seemed like yet another example. We're talking about Donald Trump saying that we had the aircraft carrier, you know, headed toward North Korea when in fact it was headed toward Australia. I think it was
part of exercises.
That he
there.
Didn't know. I mean, I get the feeling that he didn't know what was going on. That he was just bloviating.
Well, don't forget in that interview, he said, I think it was CNN. He remembered the cake. He was eating. He just didn't remember what country he was bombing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was delicious cake, though, by the way.
The best.
It's beautiful.
Well, I think which is more concerning to you? That the administration didn't know the location of the carrier strike force, or that they knew, but they were obfuscating about it?
I think you're overstating it when you say it's the administration. I mean, I think it was Trump, basically. I mean, it was Trump.
Okay, I'll
misleading.
Ask you the same question that way.
It's very troubling.
Which one's more bothersome, that maybe he didn't know or that he knew, but he was twisting it so that we thought, by God, they're there now, we'll show them?
I can't even really entertain the second possibility. I don't think that he knew.
Yeah, the fact that he doesn't know where, you know, a Navy is doesn't surprise me.
Aircraft carrier?
Oh, no, that implies more curiosity than I think this guy
has.
Yeah,
that implies that he would ask.
It suggests to the North Koreans, and maybe this is a good thing, that this guy is just completely disconnected.
Crazy as your leader.
Yes, crazy as your leader is. And the South Koreans are expressing dismay and feeling betrayed. Like, well, wait a minute, you said you're on the way, but you're on the way to Australia? What's going on?
Well, we were being fed, or we were cobbling together a false narrative altogether, because then the story was that the Russians and the Chinese were flagging our ships to surveil us, surveilling the North Koreans.
Well, this is exactly what I think a lot of us worry about, which is that one false move and, you know, suddenly, you know, if we overreact slightly to something, or if they overreact slightly to something, it's not inconceivable. You could touch off a war that begins with North Korea shelling South Korea.
So then Sean Spicer asked about this, the direction that the armada was heading, said, well, they were heading to North Korea. They said, yeah, but they were going south. He said, yeah, well, they were going south, and then they were going to go north.
They're taking the long way.
So that's...
it's a scenic route.
I mean, so you could say they're heading to Oklahoma if you wanted. Eventually, they'll get there. I mean, everybody is headed everywhere with that logic. And the quizzical looks on the reporters' faces were priceless. Sean Spicer continues to have the hardest job in the world. The fact that he's able to get up every day and put on a suit coat is amazing.
Yeah, but he's the worst guy, worst press secretary I've ever seen. I mean, you just don't show up in the press room and look ticked off.
That day he went, oh boy, I got to figure this one out. I've got to figure out a way to justify or paint that story into a plausible or a positive image. God bless him.
What hunger for power or money would have prompted him to stay on in that job after the second day when Trump sent him out and said, tell them that we had the largest crowd ever at an inauguration?
Yeah, red flag.
I mean, at some point, do you just say, you know what, find someone else to do this because I'm not going to mortgage my reputation?
Yeah.
I have this impulse. Maybe you have it too, just every once in a while you just feel sorry for him.
Like, a little bit.
Like, oh my gosh, poor guy. But then you think, no. He chose this job, and he continues to choose it every day. When he wakes up and puts on the suit that you're talking about, he knows what he's in for. He knows he's got this crazy guy whose statements are often just indefensible, and he's trying to defend them.
Well, that may not be fair, Eric. People believe in Donald Trump. People believe in the cause that Donald Trump represents, draining the swamp. Somebody's got to speak for him, and it's going to be an imperfect science, but somebody has to do it. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. I can
his
see.
Cause is,
see you can believe in the overall vision of Donald Trump. Exactly what that is, I'm not sure, but you can believe in that. But you can also, if you're in a position, you know, as someone who is an observer and not a defender, you can say, well, yeah, you know, yes, he gets things wrong. He's wrong about that. Sean Spicer is not allowed ever to say, yes, the president misspoke.
That's my point.
He doesn't get to say
this
that.
This is what the job is.
So, yeah, but that's a terrible job to have. I can see saying, look, yes, Donald Trump has weakened all these details, but I'm really glad he's president because X, Y, and Z. But you can't say, yeah, this guy is getting it right. Yes, he did. President Obama did bug, wiretap Trump Tower, and we had the biggest crowds.
Well, what's Sean Spicer supposed to do about that?
Well, at some point, somebody had, and there's nobody around Trump.
That's not Sean Spicer's job.
It's not.
Not well, before the White House press
It's
corps.
Reince Priebus's job, I
sure
guess.
Sure it is. Maybe it's Ivanka's job. I mean, somebody needs to try and tell him to start telling the truth. But when Sean Spicer represents the administration before the United States press, his job isn't to call him out.
Yeah, but if somebody asked you, John, to say things that you knew were not true and to put your reputation on the line— Would you do it? I mean, you might do it if you needed to feed your family.
No,
but
I would say that the Armada was heading to North Korea via Australia. They were going south before they went north.
They were
going to
pick up some souvenirs before they got there.
Do
had
you
buy
guys
some little
think
koala bears.
That the Chicago Cubs, he said, segueing from the whatever that was. What's your take, Scott, on the Cubs rings and the generous distribution of them and the letter to the recipients that they can't sell it or trade.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought the rings themselves are, as all championship rings are, atrocious. I mean, it is.
Well, I think they're glorious.
Do you? I mean, no, they're glorious because of what they represent.
Well,
but
I mean,
would you go into it? You would never. I'm looking at what you're wearing now. You're not wearing a ring that's bigger than your head. You know, there's nothing.
I'm not the world champion either. I'll tell you what.
Oh, sure you are, John.
If I was in Game 7, I might be wearing that ring right now.
Oh, no, it's awesome.
You're a White Sox fan.
No.
Let's just lay
that on. I'm a Cubs fan. No.
Oh, I thought you were a White Sox
fan.
No, I'm a Cubs fan. I was told to be one by John Cass. So he can be surly.
He told you to be a White Sox fan or a Cubs fan?
Cubs fan.
Well, why is that?
First week here, I said, John. You
oh,
know,
that's true. That's good advice. Keep
going. I said, John, I don't know. I hate the American League. You can actually track the decline of the American culture with the institution of the designated hitter rule. This is math. You can't deny it. It just goes. But clearly the Sox at the time were dedicated to winning. So, you know, I'm kind of torn. He goes, what's your address? I go, what? He goes, what's your bleeping address? I go, well, it's blah, 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 North so-and-so. He goes, North Cubs, done. And that's how I became a Cubs fan. So I love the Cubs, but the ring is atrocious. But it's awesome. And I think sending out the letter saying you have to give us first opportunity to buy it back for a buck. I think that's right. So you don't see it on eBay.
You think it's right? It's not a gift,
Scott.
Then. It's not a gift.
Did John Cass tell you to say that, too? Really?
No, John Cass does not tell me everything
Good
to
Lord.
Say. I don't.
But it's not a gift if you can't do what
exactly.
you want with it.
It's not a gift. You can't. If I gave you a gift, Scott, for Christmas, and then I found that you didn't want, like, or need that gift anymore, or maybe you were cash strapped and you decided to sell it, do you think it would be appropriate for me to tell you I get that gift back for $1?
If it's a copyright, if it's like my cartoon, yeah, I think that's copyrighted, mister.
One last thing, fellas. Blagojevich, Eric, do you have any interest in letting the former governor out a little early?
Not until he comes clean on what he did and admits that it was wrong. And I do think that his sentence is awfully long for what he did. But I think that one of the big reasons that he's still in there is that he has shown so little contrition. And his attorney was arguing the other day, well, he didn't do anything wrong, so he didn't commit any crime, so he can't admit to them. And this is actually a sticking point. I believe it came up in the arguments. He had there was a hearing, I want to say, Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Blagojevich has never come clean and said, hey, you know, I did these bad things, and I'm really sorry for them. His apology at his sentencing was very hedged. He was very cagey about what he said. And he just seems to have never really gotten his mind around what he did and why it was so bad.
It's an interesting argument that he puts forward. The difference between lobbying for votes and selling votes is hard to discern. The problem for him is that didn't work. They said, oh, yes, it is. You were trading, and therefore you go to jail now. So even though he felt that was the right angle, it didn't work. So he really does need to do a full-scale mea culpa, and he won't.
You just need to say, this is what I did. And he doesn't have to then turn around and say, and I think I was right. Or he just has to say, this is what I did, and I'm really sorry that
I
did
sorry.
It.
Sorry, and you're right. I would throw my – if I wanted to see my kids graduate from high school, I would find the words. I would become the world's greatest actor if I didn't believe them.
Exactly.
14 years, it is really a long sentence.
Oh, my gosh.
For all the people who have, like, killed people.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was obviously a shot across the bow. This was a message
to
other
elected
officials.
Oh, yeah, well, that's going to work, isn't it, Scott?
Well, so far, it's been.
No, really. I mean, think about that. This idea that if we punish Blagojevich severely enough, because what, George Ryan got off easy?
I mean, George Ryan was in prison for six and a half year sentence while Blagojevich was doing some of this.
You
stuff,
know, it's
so.
Just I just don't think that works. I don't understand the brains of these people, why they even get near what could be a
an offense that'll send him to jail. But they do. They do. That's the nature of the beast. Some of the Mincing Rascals podcast, you can subscribe to it, The Mincing Rascals, wherever you download your finer podcasts. We always post it on our Facebook page, on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook, and you can find it at WGN.com. By the way, the perfect marriage of those topics, if you think about it, was on Celebrity Apprentice when Rod Blagojevich was being judged by Donald Trump. And the scene where Blagojevich gets kicked off is just mind-blowing. It's like a minute, 20 seconds that you have to hear after this. We never thought we'd be near before. Thank you, Veronica. John Williams here. This is our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is an app my cousin and I developed. Just stop your crying. It's a sign of the time. We'll feed you videos, songs, and stories that are of interest to you. And we ask you to score them on a scale of 1 to 100. You gotta get away from me. Stop your crying, baby, it'll be all right. They told me that the end is near. We gotta get away from me. We always started out with a song, Griffin's choosing. All right, Griff, so we'll rate down on a scale of 1 to 100. I think we're fair and reasonable about this part where we judge the songs. We give it about 10 seconds, and then we tell them if it's any good or not. And I'm going to give that one a 54. I do not like these big anthemic reverbed duos. Who are we listening to here, Rip?
You've never given anything lower than like an 80. You always love the song.
Well, I know who this is. That's he was on SNL last weekend.
That is Harry Styles.
Harry Styles.
Right. Oh, God, yeah, my... One of my friends went, mm-hmm, Harry Styles. Yeah, I'll have some of that. That's what one of my friend's reactions was. So what did you think, Sam?
65.
Veronica Carter in the newsroom, 1 to 100.
I'm going to give it a 77, just because it wasn't as annoying as some of the other songs we've heard on this segment.
I thought that the song...
Wow. I'm taking that very personally.
I think you and Griffin.
We just have different styles, that's all.
I think that was meant to be personal, Griffin. So
let's be clear.
What?
I search the internet. I feel out what is big in the world, and I bring it to you. I'm not casting judgment on these songs by playing them.
Okay, so what do you give this
Listen to my score.
What do you...
I like this song. I give it like a 75 also. We're in lockstep on this one, Veronica.
Well, okay. You and Veronica are. Sam and I are just like, whatever, really? I mean, if you're a great singer, that's all you got? That's to me not... I can do that.
You can do that? Let's hear it. Yeah.
La, la, la. I can do that if I need to be in a studio, but I could pull that one off.
I do agree. I tend to really loathe the songs that are overproduced.
Thank you. That's kind of what I'm saying. That felt way... If you're a great singer, I am not a fan of that kind of mix.
What's the name of that song, Griff?
Sign of the Times by Harry Styles.
Bad times.
Damn. Excuse me. I'm just so emotional about this. Well,
You're not personally involved in that, are you, Griff?
He's a former One Direction member. I was a huge fan. That's not exactly true, but... They did make some good songs, and I think this one's just fine.
I don't hate on boy bands. Hey, I've come around on Britney Spears, just speaking of old-time acts that I think we could open our hearts back up to.
Speaking of boy bands, no, I like Britney Spears.
Did you hear how I made that work, Sam? I said, speaking of acts from yore that we are giving a second life to. I know Britney wasn't. She wasn't a boy band, was she, Britney Spears?
No, no.
All right.
Well,
so
people can give their score on the song, see what they think.
We've posted the song. You can watch the video and tell us what you think. All right, Griff, what else you got?
I have a question about movies, and it's not what we usually do, but it's baseball season is back. I wanted to ask about the movie Field of Dreams.
Greatest baseball movie ever.
I mean, that is one way we could take the conversation. What's your score for Field of Dreams? I think mine would be lower than yours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even in my top five baseball movies, if I had to be honest. You're stunned. You looked away.
I just dropped my head in shame. Sam, Field of Dreams, 1 to 100, go.
97.
Wow.
Veronica, Field
92.
Of Dreams.
92.
96.
I like it. I'm going to go 74.
Oh.
Okay, but what's your question then?
Well, okay, so at the end of the movie, there's a scene where Kevin Costner asks his ghost dad, do you want to have a catch? I want to know, does everyone say that or... Does anybody actually say that? I say play catch.
That line has bugged me forever. I love that movie. I don't know how that one was written that way.
Well, I wonder if it's like a regional thing.
It's a clunker. I don't know how they did that.
It's an East Coast thing. Have a Catch is an East Coast.
That's an East
is
Coast thing.
Really?
Okay.
Yes.
But this is Iowa. These are Iowans, right? Does the story...
That's true.
Are they from the East Coast before they moved to Iowa?
Maybe it's an East Coast and an Iowa thing.
You say, hey, you want to play Catch? You want
to play
Catch?
The writer could be an East Coaster.
Say it again?
The writer could be from the East Coast.
Yeah, maybe so. Sometimes you do see those sort of regional things creep in.
It's like soda, right? Soda.
Right. Or Coke or Pepsi. Some people say Coke for all carbonated beverages. Some people say soda. Some people say pop.
Yeah.
Plot twist. The writer of Field of Dreams is from Edmonton, Canada.
No, you don't know that.
I just looked it up.
You just looked it up.
Maybe they say have a catch in Canada.
Have a catch, eh? Yeah, maybe that's
oh,
it.
Oh, don't you know?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, Griffel, if you're scoring that...
No, I'm not scoring it. I'm asking people, what do you say?
Right, but I mean, so one would be one. You'd score left or right.
Yeah,
play catch, have catch.
Yeah, we got play catch at 100.
Totally play catch.
Maybe you hear them both ways. You don't think that it's as weird as you do. You'd go 50.
I always thought it was obtuse. I always thought... In fact, you could do a whole segment of your podcast, or somebody should do something somewhere. Lines that you remember were... And they're not exactly anachronisms, but they just don't get it right. They're somehow wrong.
Yeah.
The language, the vocabulary.
You're saying it's wrong. I don't think that it's wrong.
It's always bugged me. I'm glad
it's
funny that you bring
me,
that up.
But it's just an interesting thing. So we're asking people about that.
All right. What else you got?
There's a viral video of a horse attacking an alligator. Have you seen this?
No. No.
It took place in Florida.
Don't worry, by the way. I haven't forgotten the Blago Donald Trump audio. You will hear that before noon. Keep going, Griff.
Nothing. That's exactly what it is.
The horse is stomping on an alligator?
Kind of, yeah. It's crazy.
And what are you asking us? How awesome is that?
Well, maybe I wanted to ask just who do you got? Because the video shows you, like, you know, what actually happens. But let's just take the video out of it.
You've got to be rooting for the horse, right?
Yeah, but who do you think will win?
Oh.
In a horse versus alligator? I mean, the horse has... You know, higher ground, I feel like.
Yeah, but the alligator will break your leg, take you down, and eat you.
And that's true. And if you break a horse's leg, as we all know, that's all it really takes.
Glue factory, then, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so who do you got in this one? Sam.
Alligator.
Veronica.
I think the alligator will win, but I'm going to vote for the horse just because I loathe alligators.
I'm with her. I mean, God bless you, alligators. You make great purses, but we want the horse to win. And I will root, but my guess is the alligator wins.
I think the horse... Yeah, maybe I'm them going with my heart, but I feel like it's got a better chance.
This is the stupidest question we've ever asked on Vibe Score. And does the video reveal who wins, Griff?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, all right.
So check that out there.
I think we need to put up what's your vibe for the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
And my vibe for the Blackhawks is 80. It would have been 95 if they had advanced to the next round. You know, they stunk up the bed for four games and... That was terrible, but I'm still there for him.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to go way lower than you. Sam, what are you thinking?
Blackhawks vibe. How do you feel about the Blackhawks?
73.
Okay. Carter, in the newsroom.
I'm going to go 82.
Griffin.
Yeah, I'm with you. 80.
Yeah. Why hate? And then the other one I'm going to post up there right after we get done here is... I don't know what the question is for Blago, though. It's maybe what... How strongly do you feel that he should get... an early release. Would you be for that? And I am for an early release for Blago. I don't know how early, but I think his sentence is ridiculously long. Veronica, would you let Blago out early?
Yeah, I think so. He's, you know, he's served it.
She's a mom. How about you, Griff?
I haven't thought deeply on this. I don't trust my gut reaction here, but my gut reaction is to say no. I would not support it.
How about in the sports department?
Letting him out, I give him a 10.
Yeah.
No way.
I'm kind of more with Sam on that.
Other people who do worse get out earlier.
This is the thing. I think there's perspective here. I know. I mean, point to the injured person in Blagojevich's case for me. Show me the person that really got harmed. For 14 years, he had to go to jail for.
He ruined the Serbian reputation.
Serbs everywhere.
Yes,
say 100.
Hey.
All right. That's our Vibe Score segment. It's 11:48. Thank you, Griffin. There are more questions that you can scan and score. We'll do this segment again next week. So the delicious audio still to come. It is 11:52. So just in prepping for the shows this week, I came across that old episode. And it was when we were talking on the air during the news about whether or not Blagojevich would get out early. A panel of judges who'd previously convicted him and sent him to jail reviewed his case and said, no, you're not going to get out early. And as I was looking for some reaction or audio from Blagojevich, I found the episode where Donald Trump kicks him off The Apprentice. Hit it, Griff.
Did you think Rod was a good project manager?
No, I don't. I think he was a poor project manager.
Governor, go ahead, respond.
Yeah, let me ask a couple things. Number one. The Harry Potter thing's pretty self-explanatory. And if you're working for your team, and yeah, there's some creative tension between a creative guy like him and Brett, my feeling was there he didn't work as hard. He didn't work as hard for Brett or give his best efforts for the team because Brett was the guy in charge for the creative design stuff. Now, again, I had veto power.
Michael, why are you smiling?
Because every time I've come in here, you ask me a question, who was weakest, who should I give you an answer? He wasn't giving any answers. Everyone was great earlier. Everyone was great all of this time, and now all of a sudden start throwing people under the bus.
No, I think Curtis is
so
a guy with
that real. Sounds like to me you're making things up. All of a sudden now Curtis didn't work as hard.
No,
that just doesn't make any
that.
Sense to me.
I didn't say that. When they don't know the product.
Well, you did actually sort of say
well,
that.
Well, I suggested that.
I think you did say it, not sort of, right?
Well, I believe what I said was he had a feeling that he wasn't getting direction from the deputy in charge on the ground while I was gone. And never brought it to my attention, and I constantly called before I was on planes and other things to get a sense
okay,
of what
but
I
listen,
do.
I just want to ask this one question. Your Harry Potter facts were not accurate. Who did the research?
There was not a specific direction to do the research on Harry Potter, but the inability to learn the product, and there was an issue in the...
Was that their inability or your inability?
I suppose I should have directed everybody else to learn the product. I will say that's sort of an axiomatic thing that you might want to do as you understand what the challenge is. I thought convey to them what the challenge was, what we should do, collaborate with them over the phone with the limitations having the other project manager.
Yeah, but you
there.
Went to Orlando to right. learn about Harry Potter. Nobody right. else did. So wouldn't you have been the one to know the product and learn the product?
I feel like I knew the product. In fact, I wrote a lot of the text. I talked about the different houses, and I was the one who said houses and classes interchangeably because I was trying to be more explicit so people can get a concept of it. But it's Slytherin, and it's Hufflepuff, and it's Ravencloth, and it's...
So are you responsible?
Uh-oh.
I think we did not win. But I think if you were looking at this like a baseball team, we're making progress. I believe some of our talent...
Yeah, but you're making progress, and you're running out of people.
Understand?
You know, you're right. doing wonderfully. Everything's great, but you keep losing, and you're running out of people.
Right.
And you're the project manager.
Right. I know.
And Governor, I have great respect for you. I have great respect for your tenacity, for the fact that you just don't give up. But Rod, you're fired.
So off he goes. Somebody just called and said to producer Griff, here's my theory that the reason the courts don't have to worry about releasing him early is because the president is going to pardon him. Sort of a season-ending twist there. But how insane is that? That those two guys, one goes to jail, one becomes president of the United States. And if at the time you said pick which one, I don't think many of us would be very good at that, let alone that we would imagine that that's how that whole thing was going to shake out anyway. So there you go. You know, when you listen to that too, I mean, you really do hear the essence of Rod Blagojevich, and you also hear the essence of Donald Trump. Trump's really good in that room. He's good at that. I don't know if he's going to be a great president. I hope history looks back and we all figure it out and he has a great run. I mean, none of us benefits when Trump fails. So I hope he figures it out. But right now, if you said, what's he better at? The host of a game show like that or the president? Well, clearly he's good at that. I mean, he made Blagojevich's inability to know the details about Harry Potter seem dramatic. I mean, there was bona fide tension in that room. Nobody's going to go to jail as a result of that. Nobody's going to get their head cut off. But you're like, oh, no. He doesn't know the Blagojevich answer. Blagojevich doesn't know the Harry Potter answer. It was a very strange time.
It's 11:57. All right, we're almost done. News is right around the corner. This is WG.